Depending on who you ask, you might learn that this man brought backwards China into the 20th century and turned it into a world superpower. Or that this man and his misguided policies were responsible for the deaths of tens of millions of people through starvation, persecution, prison labor, and mass executions. Today we'll talk about the horrific cost of tyrannical governmental control and why we must fight to preserve liberty and the blessings of freedom. Hi, I'm Stuart Shepard, and this is First Liberty Live. If this is your first time here, or if you haven't done it already, we invite you to click the big blue subscribe button, and we'll notify you when new episodes are coming out. You'll be among the first to know. You know, with the current cancel culture banning so many voices online outright, we want to make sure that we have a direct connection with you, and that's why it's so important for you to subscribe. Our guest today is Lee Zhao, I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right.
Correct.
Schooland, am I at least close?
Yes, very okay. Good.
You grew up in Chairman Mao's China. You are someone who can point out the warning signs in our own country. Hi, Lee. Welcome.
Hi, Stuart.
It's good to have you here. As I was reading your bio, I realized that you and I were born the same year, but literally and figuratively on opposite sides of the planet. What was it like growing up in Chairman Mao's China?
Did you try to dig?
We talked about it a lot, but we did not actually attempt. Well, okay, once I attempted it, but we didn't get very far.
Yeah, growing up, 1958 was known with this picture as a great leap forward. And Chairman Mao believed if China produced a lot of steel, the total production of steel surpass United States and Great Britain, China would become the number one economic power
right.
of the world. So he made the whole country produce steel.
And describe what we're seeing in this picture, what these little columns are.
Those are the people, I don't know who they are, but I remember my mother as a university professor was like this with her students at university, on university campus, and sports fields, and making all these mud furnace or whatever. And
the idea was those are backyard steel furnaces.
Yes.
That in those tiny little columns, you can make high quality steel was the idea.
Yes. And there was not enough iron ores or coal. So every family have to donate their metal products, like shovel, wok, doorknobs, and nails and screws to their unit, and to be melted down into new production of steels. And they didn't have things to melt those things down, so they first cut all the trees. Now you see almost no trees, only one little left.
Right.
Then they use all the chairs and tables. University had plenty of that, and they all taken to melt the metal product. And they will get a piece like this, and they cover with a red cloth, and with a drum and chanting, they deliver to the city government.
Wow.
That's the production of our university or of our whatever unit.
Only one problem, it didn't really work. You couldn't produce high quality steel in a backyard.
Destroyed
like that.
All the products already made.
And this repeated itself over and over again, is my understanding, from one government program to the next. And every time it came around, it produced horrific results. The human cost was extraordinary, incomprehensible even. But the government always said, well, it was the weather, or it was an economic issue that was out of our control. And the solution was always the next government program. That sounds really familiar to me these days.
Yes. Let me back down a little bit, talking about today. Xi Jinping had exactly the same mentality as Mao Zedong 60-some years ago. He told Chinese people, as long as we have GDP growth higher than United States or other developed countries, we're number one power in the world. And the way they calculate GDP is different, and also because China started very low, so their growth is higher, teach people that. They just see we have a certain number in the United States, especially last year. China said we still have a 6% and the United States is so low and some negative. See, we're world power.
Yeah.
So the Chinese people believe that. And the Chinese economy for many years was a GDP-driven economy. Every governor, mayor had the quota of how many, what number of GDP they must produce. So they open the road, cover the road, open the road, cover the road, just to have a number for the GDP.
Right.
So the economy is not benefit the society, the people, but exactly the same mentality. And the Chinese people believe that. They thought they were very powerful right now because they have really high GDP. So, yeah. This is a planned economy. Everything was in the top leader's head.
And that's what I was going to ask you next. In the U.S., we have our idea of how the world works, and it's what we've always known, and we're in this bubble, if you will, in our country. But it's hard for us to comprehend how different it can be under a different form of government. When you talk to people, because I know you speak quite a bit, how do you help them get that mindset of what it's like to grow up in communist China, how different it really is?
The government treated people all like idiots, know nothing, cannot think. Actually, they don't want the people to think.
Yeah.
So they told you cannot think or you cannot think correctly. So let me tell you how to think, what to think, mostly what to think. Right now, China under Mao is the same as under Xi Jinping. They want one person's way of thinking and thoughts. Everybody, 1.4 billion people follow this one.
Or else.
Yeah, or else imprisoned or killed. So, but not everybody's stupid. Everybody could think because God created us this way. So they try everything to block you from learning to knowing. So you don't have a lot of information to think, to use, and also and threaten you if you think any other ways.
Right.
So with all these methods, they try to get everybody to think one way. Just like earlier you mentioned, after this Great Leap Forward, all the forest was destroyed, and production was stopped, every other production was stopped, and China faced a great famine. And China calls it 3 years of natural disaster, one. Two, Soviet Union asked China to repay the debt early, before the turn. So these two were caused the reason China, everybody was starving to death. Actually, it was their planned economy, their own doing caused this. At the same time, when they're producing the steels in the countryside, because they were planning the economy, they were telling farmers what to plan, regardless if the soil or the weather condition or whatever is suitable for that or not.
Right.
Only farmer knows. But central government said, no, you don't know. We know. We tell you. So the farmer was following the government order to plant things that's not suitable for the land. There's no production,
right.
no harvest for crops, and people were hungry and starving. And the government blamed the birds.
The birds?
The birds. They say the birds would eat the greens in the fields. So the movement was to kill all the birds. I was part of it.
Wow. Okay.
How do you kill all the birds?
Well, why would you kill all the birds?
Oh, because birds will...
Well, I know, but...
They say birds taking food from human beings.
Yeah.
So, all the kids were asked to find something can make noise. At 5 o'clock at dawn, and we all went out to make noise. When the birds coming back home to rest in the trees,
mm-hmm.
We were under the trees, on top of the trees, on top of the roof, making noises. So the birds could not rest. Birds just keep flying and flying until they drop dead.
Oh, wow.
And the kids will use a string, some grass to string the birds to claim prices.
Oh, like a refund or a rebate or something?
No, just a red flower,
oh.
A medal.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no money.
Yeah.
And you will find some pictures of a truckload of birds and kids with a string of birds. And the birds were all killed, but because birds are all killed, insects became wild because birds
eat the insects.
And the locusts came back. And they wiped out all the crops, already very scarcity, and wiped out. And the insects. So starvation followed, and the government blamed the nature. Blame Soviet Union, blame everything else, and people believed because either you don't dare not to believe or you have no other information. So until today, most people still call 1961, 62, 63 3 years of natural disaster.
And not that many years ago, in the past couple decades, a researcher went back and was able to get through the records from that era mm-hmm. and started adding it up and found that by his estimation, 45 million people died, which is on par with World War II. That's what the part I meant about incomprehensible is you just can't imagine that much tragedy in one country at one time.
At that time, the average intake of calorie of entire China was lower than the Jews in Auschwitz. Average intake of calorie.
Wow.
Entire China.
Let's talk about the U.S., because I know people watching us right now, they're hearing you describe this, and they're going, this sounds strangely familiar, themes of it, as far as the way the government operates, the idea of central control, the idea of never taking responsibility, the idea of blaming it on anything but a government program, and the solution is always a government program. As you look across the United States right now, do you see red flags? Are there warning signs to you?
Everywhere. It's so obvious. Especially last year, when people start to vandalize statues, changing street names, exactly what happened in China during the Cultural Revolution, and killing all the they call it old culture, old.
Oh, gotcha.
They call it four. I don't know why they have four categories, four oaths.
But four things that were old
yeah.
that needed to be gotten rid
right.
of.
Right.
Okay.
For example, all the antiques, artifacts, paintings, and temples, churches, buildings, names, statues, people, books, they all belong to that four category.
Right.
And have to be destroyed.
Canceled, as we would say in our
right.
current linguistic form. Yeah.
Especially when I saw people asking for changing the name of the street or taking down some statues. I say, oh my goodness, oh, that's terrible. It's just like Cultural Revolution coming back alive in this country. If it happened in China, I'm not surprised. It's still in China. Cultural Revolution never ended.
Right.
But in this country, we escaped communism to come to this country, supposed to be land of free. And I say, oh my goodness, very frightening.
We're living in a time in the U.S. when people who respect the Constitution are called mm-hmm. extremists. When a bill that destroys legal protections for religious freedom is called the Equality Act, even though it removes equality. We're told that we must follow the science, even though every week the science changes, so we have to follow it somewhere else every week. What does history teach us about people who speak in that form of doublespeak, as it's come to be known?
Well, number one, they don't respect science. They want everything served to their purpose. So they don't respect anything. And they use science as an excuse, actually. And they just want the equality is such a, how do I call it? Mao Zedong became powerful because he promised people of equality. His idea of equality is redistribution.
Right.
And I thought this country, when you talk about equality, is supposed to be equal opportunity. But seems to me recently people talk about equality and to make the gap between rich and poor smaller.
Right.
Right? Their supposed proposed method was redistribution.
So it's the difference between equality of opportunity and equality of outcomes.
Right.
Yeah.
And a few years ago, their war on the top 2% or top 1%.
Right.
And it happened, my family in China 100 years ago was top 1%. They were producers. They were the pioneer of capitalism. Their contribution to the society, to the modernization of China is not measurable.
Huh.
But the communists had a war against the top 1%. Number one, they were either killed or put in prison, or they some fortunate ran away. And all of our land, factories, and properties were nationalized.
Right.
And redistributed to these people, the so-called 99% or the people who didn't have many. The result was nobody had any more. There's nobody produced anymore. So everybody became equally poor, very, very equal.
So it was equal, but not in a good way.
Very, very equally poor. And we were so equal, we had the same kind of clothes. We have the same hairstyle. We all, regardless your big build or small, everybody gets certain amount of food each month,
wow,
determined by the government. 2 liters of cooking oil per year, and things like this. And our family happened to be tall and constantly hungry because my father played sport and didn't have enough to eat. And fortunately, I'm not that big. I didn't have a big appetite, so my portion could be shared with my little brother or. And that's very equal, but really equally poor and miserable.
First Liberty Institute focuses on religious freedom and protecting religious freedom for all Americans, not just Christians, but people of other faiths as well. In that fight, one of the things that we often say to people is that an authoritarian government, a totalitarian government, can't stand to have religious freedom because it can't have people who look to an authority higher than the government. Does that ring true with you?
Exactly. And we need to talk about a little bit difference between Mao and Xi today. They both are anti-religion and persecuting Christians, but Mao understood what Christian is, so he's afraid. The Christian idea,
huh,
not only the authority, you know, Christians obey God and choose to obey God before man. He's more afraid of Christianity, the teaching. But Xi Jinping today, he doesn't understand what Christian is all about. Just like you said, he's afraid of people, number one, have a higher authority. Number two, gather. He's very afraid of people gather because when people gather, they may talk about uprising or whatever ideas, and they may share ideas. The reason Jack Ma disappeared, now in trouble, is because so many people choose to listen to him. He's very smart. He had a big empire. He can go walk into White House and talk to the U.S. president. And Xi Jinping is so afraid of that because more people will rather go to, if Xi Jinping is giving a talk and Jack Ma is giving a talk, nobody will go to Xi Jinping if it's not by force.
Right.
everybody will go listen to Jack Ma. Xi Jinping cannot tolerate that. So Xi Jinping now today is not only persecuting our religion, also anybody who became popular. Unless you first let the government know, I'm totally in line with you. I will only praise you and help you, and they will let you to be kind of successful in your area, like a business or whatever. Otherwise, no. Even that, they won't let go of it. For example, the second largest crypto platform was in China, and that guy, because he want to keep his business, he believes in cryptocurrency, he went to the government, submitted himself to the government, I will do everything in your line, but still, because some people use his platform to use Chinese money to buy a crypto, and then later on they cash it out in other country to spend,
right,
and became illegal money laundry, and then he was imprisoned.
Yeah.
They shut down the whole platform, and they're so afraid of any kind of crowd following something. So right now, Xi Jinping is not only persecuting Christians and also Muslims and Uyghurs, they were Muslims,
mm-hmm,
and Buddhism, but the Buddhist temple, they're money driven. They all started to sing red songs and swear to follow the party like this, and now they were kind of exempt from the religious persecution.
Interesting. Now, let's talk about justice for a bit. Mm-hmm. We have a president who just started a commission to give him ideas about transforming not just the Supreme Court, but the entire court system. But in particular, the part that's gotten a lot of headlines is the idea of adding extra seats to the Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. And it's always at least enough seats for them to win every time. So it would unbalance it. It's a ploy to give them power over that part of our government. What's it like when the legal system, the court system, is just a puppet of the party in power? What's it like? What's your view on that?
There's no rule of law in China. And China has a very good constitution. But constitution and law are totally different things. Constitution is a showpiece. And for example, 1989, students went on the street because they say we're constitutional, because the constitution promised to, we have freedom of gathering, freedom of
assembly.
Speech in what,
yeah,
assembly.
Yeah.
No, they all, when Chinese government talking about illegal, there's no law behind it. It just say, it's not what I like. It's not what I want. Then you're illegal.
So and it's not about justice, it's
no,
about power.
No. For example, I was listening at the clubhouse, very famous human rights lawyer in China. He's still in China right now. Just came out of prison, second or third time, I don't know.
Wow.
And for his own case, he was. People asked him, tell us, your case was so famous, that there's two lawyers who's on his side, but they first talk with the judge and the lawyers and him to make a strategy, because they knew he will not tell lies. So they said, okay, we're not going to give you a chance to talk in the court. And we will ask your lawyer the questions so you don't get a chance to say the truth. So the lawyer, okay, it's not as stubborn as he was. We'll say two lawyers. One is, we call red face, one is white face. One is good, one is the other way.
Mm-hmm.
And we will say the case, but avoid the truth. We're not lie, but we kind of go around, say, okay, you're bad on this and this, but the very important part we don't say, because this will give you 20 years. So we say that, they can judge you on this. Okay, then after that, the other lawyer will say, something to please the government, where judge want him to do, and so they will reduce more of your crime, and then they will ask you something. Then you already no chance to say what's really going on,
right.
What's on your mind, and then you just have to say some not important words, and then the judge will say, okay, based on this and this, I give you this sentence. So this is all pre-determined
ahead of time.
The whole court thing was just a showpiece.
It's like theater. I mean,
yes,
it sounds like
it's a theater.
Play. Yeah.
And I was so shocked because I lived in this country for a long time.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it, because when I was living in China, there's no such a thing. No courthouse, no lawyers, no law degrees in universities.
Yeah.
Only new things, the lawyers. And it's maybe only 40 years old. But before that, they were. Just happened, my great-grandfather, my mother's grandfather, was the number one lawyer. They call him number one lawyer when China first had a lawyer, this title, they give lawyer a number to register, like you bar, right? You pass the bar. He was the first one. So he got the first license to be a lawyer, so they call him the number one lawyer. That was more than 100 years ago, but then when the communists came, no more.
Right.
And so until today, they so-called law or whatever, no.
Now, I know you spend and devote quite a bit of your time to speaking to young people, quite literally around the world. What's the most important thing young people today need to know from your perspective? What is it they need to hear?
The number one thing I often tell the young people is, number one, don't believe everything the textbook or your teacher teach you. Think for yourself. Number two, stop asking the government to do this and that for you. You're supposed to be responsible for yourself, make your own choice for life, make your own choice for to think, to do things. When the more you ask government, you empower the government, they're getting bigger, then you will get smaller. The bigger the government get, the smaller you get. Until one day you have no more you, like in China, only the government.
Right.
And I say, asking the government to do things for you is not responsible and is wrong.
Lee Skoulin, great insights. Thank you so much for making time for us. I've really enjoyed this conversation and learned a lot through it. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, and thank you for watching. First Liberty Institute is the nation's largest nonprofit legal firm that exclusively does religious freedom cases. If that's something that resonates with you, would you consider joining us? You can click on the big red give button on firstlibertylive.com. It's up at the top. You can't miss it. You can be part of this effort to change our culture for the better. We will see you next time right here on First Liberty Live.